Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com. It is August 2013 and this is episode 163 of the podcast. Now today I'm really excited to bring you an interview with the legendary James Scott Bell. I say legendary because if you're somebody who buys books on writing, and let's face it, we probably all are, you will have seen James's books and you probably would have heard him at conferences, and he writes all kinds of craft books, and I've as well as thrillers, actually. He's also a thriller writer. I mean, he's multi-talented. I've heard James speak a number of times, including Thriller Fest in 2012, which was brilliant. And I was actually recently on a webinar of his, and a little tip he gave, I'll share with you now. The tip he gave was, you know, when we write scenes, we tend to write a scene that ends, you know, right or correctly, I guess is the word, you know, that ends nicely in a nicely rounded fashion. And I'm totally guilty of this. It's like, you know, start the scene, write the action, end the scene. Each kind of scene is a mini story, I guess. But what he said to in terms of thrillers, really important to cut your scenes early. So what I've done with my latest book, One Day in Budapest, is actually go back in the rewrite and often move the last paragraph from one scene to the first paragraph of the next scene, so that actually the cliffhangers are slightly earlier in the scene than I wrote it. And if I just slightly change the end of the chapter, it makes it much more of a page turner. That was a penny dropping from the wisdom of James Scott Bell in the last week. That was one of the Writer's Digest webinars, which actually I really recommend. And they're quite expensive at $79 generally, for about 90 minutes. But that one tip I can see will make me money. So at the end of the day, I always think it's good to keep on learning. And anyway, so in today's interview, I talk to James and we talk about some of his specific writing tips, the business of being an author and his thoughts around the state of publishing and self-publishing. I must say it was really hard to decide what to ask him, given his massive amounts of knowledge. So I hope you enjoy the interview, which is coming up soon. Little update first, and a giveaway, especially for my audio listeners. So my book, One Day in Budapest, is getting some great advanced reviews. Hasn't come out yet, but it will be out by the third week, the fourth week, before the end of August, it's going to be out. I'm really thrilled about these early reviews, I guess this book is slightly different to my usual work. One, it's a novella, so it's shorter. It's still, you know, 28,000 words or something, so it's, you know, good story length. But it tackles one day of escalating terrorism by neo-nationalists in Budapest. So it has a real political angle, which is quite different. But I really enjoyed writing it, and it's a topic that's really important to me. And the cover's done, and it's awesome, and I love it. And the final draft is with the proofreader. So yeah, the book will definitely be out by the next podcast. That's One Day in Budapest. If you're at all interested in being an advanced reviewer for my thrillers, you can sign up at jfpenn.com/list. And people on that list get lots of giveaways and goodies and things and advanced review copies. Okay, what else? Well, Exodus is finished in audio, recording with Veronica Jaguer, who is on the podcast a few weeks ago, and she's awesome, and I've loved listening to those files. That will be up on Audible in the next, the next month, because it takes a while for them to make it live. But Pentecost and Prophecy are available now to purchase as audiobooks on Audible and iTunes. And the trailer for Prophecy is coming up before the interview. I should say the music used in the trailer is Creative Commons from Incompetech. royaltyfreemusic.com, and a piece called The Complex. Now, it's really great to use royalty-free music, Creative Commons music, for these types of things. So that's really recommended for you if you're doing trailers and videos and stuff. To celebrate everything that's going on with the audio, I have some free download codes. So basically, you can get a free copy of the audio version of Pentecost, Arcane Thriller Number 1. So if you'd like to try that audio, and if possible, write a review on Audible if you like it, please email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, pen with a double N. You should know that by now. And the deadline for this offer is the 31st of August 2013. So yeah, a couple of free codes for the audio version of Pentecost if you would like one, because I figure you guys like to listen to audio, then please email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com. Okay, let's get on with the interview.
The prophecy in Revelation declares that a quarter of the world must die, and now a shadowy organization has the ability to fulfill these words. Can one woman stop the abomination before it's too late? Israel. A victim of Jerusalem syndrome jumps to his death from the top of the Western Wall, his body smashed on the ancient stones. Another disembowels himself under the scrawled figure of the pale horse of the apocalypse with the chilling words, "God told me to do it." Dr. Morgan Sierra, specialist in psychology of religion, travels to Israel to investigate the deaths and becomes embroiled in an international conspiracy that will use cutting-edge technology to carry an ancient curse to mankind. She joins Agent Jake Timber at Arcane, a secret government agency investigating the supernatural, and together they hunt down the Devil's Bible, pursued all the way by the evil forces of Thanatos. From the catacombs of Paris to the skeletal ossuaries of Sicily and the Czech Republic, Morgan and Jake must find the Devil's Bible and stop the curse being released into the world before 1 in 4 are destroyed in the coming Holocaust. Because in just 7 days, the final curse will be spoken and the prophecy will be fulfilled. Prophecy by J.F. Penn is available now on audible.com as well as in print and ebook formats.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with James Scott Bell. Hi James!
Hello there, nice to see you.
Great to have you on the show. So just a little introduction. James is the number one best-selling author of Plot and Structure, numerous thrillers, and several books on the craft of writing. He's a professional speaker, teaching novel writing and other skills for writers. So James, start off by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background.
All right. Well, I've been a professional writer for about 20 years. I started my training as a screenwriter and really kind of learned about structure and storytelling and dialogue and all of those things. I was a film major in college. I started teaching about maybe 15 years ago because I felt like when I first started to try to learn how to write, there was sort of a vibe going around that you really couldn't learn, that writers are born, not made, that sort of thing. I'd studied writing with Raymond Carver, of all people. I mean, start at the top in college, and wasn't able to really do what he did. And storytelling was a bit of a mystery to me. So I thought you couldn't learn it for many years. And then one day I said, I've got to try. And I studied and I practiced and I began to learn the craft to realize that you can learn it. Mm. So when I became a professional writer and started selling my own books, I decided to teach because I wanted to teach other writers what I had learned and maybe save them years of frustration. So that's where I've been for the last 20 years or so.
Mm, and you certainly help a lot of writers. But before we get into your writing tips, I want to ask you about your fiction, because I read a tweet, and you're on Twitter quite a lot, which is great, and you're really enjoying your current work in progress. I was reading that. So what are the personal themes and obsessions that drive your own fiction?
That's interesting. I asked myself that about 10 years ago and tried to look at the books that I was writing. And I think really the thing that emerges is the quest for justice. Now, I was a lawyer. I'm now, a recovering lawyer, the best kind. I was in criminal law. And the quest for justice has always been something that has engaged me, especially when it's a matter of one person who is, against the system or is innocent or is trying to prove something, and all of these odds are against them. And so that really seems to be a major thread. And of course, I do a lot of legal thrillers. I've done historical legal thrillers, contemporary, and the courtroom drama is always a part of that. So that's kind of been a natural theme for me.
And this latest work in progress, is that similar?
The latest one is the same thing. It's about, again, I think a lot of my themes are one person trying to gain justice against huge odds. A lot of that, I think, comes from my love of Hitchcock films. He's my favorite director, and most of his great movies are about, the ordinary person who gets caught up in these extraordinary circumstances. And I just find the natural drama of that to be very appealing to me.
And I wanted to start with that because, you still are enmeshed in writing fiction as well as teaching it. And when you sit down to write now, what is your writing, personal writing structure and writing day like, and writing rules, I guess?
Well, I mean, I've always been someone who advocates writing to a quota. And that's one of the first things I learned, is that you have to produce the words in order to get the material down, in order to create the product and the book and so on. So I've always written to a quota. And as far as particular projects, I, over the years, as I've taught and as I've analyzed my own process, I've come up with ways of approaching the material on a day-by-day basis. And that's changed, that's evolved. And it's still subject to change. I still enjoy reading books on the craft and articles and seeing what other authors do and then trying those things out myself. So I think the main thing is I try every day when I'm getting down and writing a scene is to find really what the meat or the juice or the hot spot of that scene is and feel the excitement of it. And then once I have an emotional connection, that's when I write.
And you mentioned a quota there. Can you give us the number of words? Everyone always wants to know that.
Well, it's evolved. Again, right now, what I do is I write a weekly quota, because what that enables me to do is if I, miss a day, and inevitably some days come up where you have to attend to other things, I can make it up on other days. So currently my quota is 6,000 words a week, and I try to take one day off, usually Sunday. I just try to take that off because I find that recharges the batteries. If I'm not actually writing and concentrating on writing, I may think about it a little bit, but what that does is it just lets my writer's mind rest and get ready. And inevitably on Monday, I feel really excited again, ready to go.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. And what I love there is you mentioned that you're still learning, that you're, you've been writing for 40 years, you're still learning and you teach people. But what is, as a pro writer, what is one of the things that you've learned recently?
Wow, recently. Well, let's see. I think I'll tell you one thing that I think I've learned that I've been incorporating into my teaching. Is that one of the things that makes a great read is the unexpected. And I'm really conscious of trying to find unexpected things to happen in the writing. And it can be as small as an odd line of dialogue or some strange item that appears in the scene or whatever it is that keeps readers from feeling like when they get to this point in the book, oh, I could see that coming. And, you know, I think if you can do that throughout the book, have these little unexpected moments, it really gets readers' attention. And I notice that when I read a book that when I get caught up in the book, that's why I'm being caught up in it, because I'm not really guessing what's going to happen. And things happen that are a little off and unexpected and, you know, twists and turns and things like that.
And do you watch for those things in the world? Do you notice things and write them down? Do you wander around with notebooks?
Well, you know, I sort of can't help it. I have other writer friends, and we talk about this. I mean, like, we'll be in a hospital room attending to a friend or something, and all of a sudden we're thinking, boy, this would be a great scene. And we start to feel a little guilty, you know, why am I thinking this? But that's sort of what being a writer is like. Everything is material, and we can't really turn that off, which I wouldn't want to, because I want to stay open to experience.
My husband's always disturbed when I go, well, that would be a great murder weapon, you know.
Exactly. Perfect.
That type of thing. But okay, so obviously you've written so many books on the craft as well. It's really hard to come up with a single question. But, you know, what are some of the most common mistakes that new writers of, you know, a couple of books are making?
I think what I see when I look at manuscripts at writers' conferences and so forth, I see, especially in the, you know, in the openings, a tendency to start off rather slowly and not get into an actual scene where there is something happening. I sometimes see characters alone, and they're thinking or they're feeling or they're starting their day or whatever it is, and I like what somebody once said, that the story begins not when you lay out the kindling, but when you strike the match. And when I teach, I talk about the opening disturbance. I think if you can have something that is not necessarily a big car chase or gunfight, not like that. I mean, that can work too. But anything that takes a character out of their ordinary day, ordinary world, and is a little bit of a disturbance, a change, something that's a little off. The example I use in my workshops is the opening shot of The Wizard of Oz. And I ask people, what is the opening shot? And a lot of people say, well, it's, the lady on the bike, or it's the tornado. No, what it is Dorothy is running down the road, looking back over her shoulder with Toto next to her, obviously disturbed about something, and we're immediately caught up in why is she disturbed like this. So that's one thing I would say. And maybe just on a craft level, I think perhaps some writers that are just starting out think that they should be further along than they are, and it takes time to learn how to write. It took me several years to start to really get it. So be sure that if you're a new writer and you want to get into this, you want to be professional, that be prepared for an apprenticeship of years.
No, that's really interesting. And I think, you know, I definitely think you're right there. And one of the questions I get asked a lot, you know, and people wonder if, you know, they want to be a successful writer, so they want to write in a category on Amazon that's going to sell. Do you think that has become a bit of an obsession? Should people start out with a genre in mind or a category in mind, or should they write, you know, the book of their heart or whatever?
Well, that's a really good question for today, because what I've likened the atmosphere today, especially with all the self-publishing possibilities, is the old pulp era in the 20s and 30s, when there was a need for a lot of stories to be produced rapidly to fill a need that the readers had. They wanted more stories and they wanted to keep them coming. And people who wanted to make a living as writers then would look at, well, I should write a detective story then, or I should write a romance story, or I should write a science fiction story, and they chose those categories in order to make a living. Now, I think that's a perfectly legitimate thing to do if you can get yourself excited about the material and learn the craft. Mm. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Mm. On the other side, I do think that there is a great deal of spiritual health for a writer to write something that they're really burning with and then find a way to get that to market. Another nice thing about self-publishing is that you can try different things and you're not necessarily tied into one brand for a long period of time. So I think the possibilities are great.
Mm, fantastic. And you have a great little book called Self-Publishing Attack, which I like a lot. I think it's a really good book. And in that, you do say that, one, the gold rush days are over, but that also if authors have a, quote, a modicum of talent, they can make a five-figure return. And of course, authors would love that. So can you expand a bit on that, what your feelings are around that?
Sure. I think in the book, what I say is that you do have to have a modicum of talent, but you know what? I think that most people who know the English language and think in story terms have talent. I think it's what you do with the talent that counts. So if you can, again, prepare yourself for a professional career by really becoming a student of the craft, and that means, practicing your writing, getting together with other writers in a critique group, perhaps going to writers' conferences, getting professional feedback by paying an editor, things like that, and know that will take some time, then it's a matter of becoming a producer of product. I think that's the key to the self-publishing success, is that you have a product that is appearing on a regular basis of a certain quality. In New York publishing, traditional publishing, they would expect someone to write a novel a year, perhaps. That's probably the average. They would say, look, if you're going to be a commercial success, you want to write at least a novel a year. So I would think a writer should think in those terms and then expect that it's going to take several books before you begin to have that steady rise in income. And that's what really I try to teach people who are starting in self-publishing, is that it's a long road, but it can grow incrementally if you're consistent. And I say, do this over and over for the rest of your life. That's one of the nice things about being a writer. You don't have to retire.
That's what I like about it too. I saw Baroness Ruth Rendell, I'm sure you know Ruth Rendell, interviewed, and she's like 86 or something, and amazing. Been writing for 50 years, 60 years or something, and in Britain you can become a baroness for your writing.
Wow. Barbara Cartland, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many books did she write?
This is what's so amazing. But what I like about your attitude, obviously you believe in writing amazing books, but you're also commercial and business savvy. So when you say apprenticeship, should a writer's apprenticeship include business and publishing and marketing, or do you not think that's important?
I do think that's important. When I teach a workshop on ebook publishing, I begin by saying, look, if you're going to do this, you're in the publishing business. And you need to understand how that business works. And put yourself in the place of someone who is working for a traditional New York publishing firm. How do they think? What do they acquire? Why do they acquire it? Why do they think it will be marketable? They have to be able to sell what they purchase, what they acquire. So you have to be able to put that hat on as well. But I know some writers who have been, and continue to be in the traditional world who get really nervous about this, thinking, I just want to write. I don't want to think about other things. And I understand that to a degree, but also it's not that complicated. The business of publishing is not that complicated. It basically consists of a product, an end user, and a little bit in between on how you connect those two things. And if you understand the basics of that, you can begin to form your own plan for creating that stream for yourself.
Absolutely. And obviously one of the things people are worried about is marketing. Now, as I said, you know, we've been chatting on Twitter and, you know, you're pretty active there and you've got a blog and you do webinars. And so you presumably believe in marketing. But what about those people who have issues with it? What advice can you give to them?
Well, they should buy your book. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, you know, that the having a book like yours, which has all the fundamentals and gives them an understanding of what's out there, what's possible, and then begin to implement those things that they can do well. For example, we'll take Twitter as an example. Twitter as opposed to Facebook. Now, I'm more active on Twitter than on Facebook. Why? Because to me and my schedule and my particular aptitude, I like that platform better and I enjoy it. And so if you learn to enjoy what you're doing, that will make the marketing aspect that much easier. Marketing is incremental as well, and it will continue and go on, but you should avoid what I call obsessive promotion disorder, which is where you think that it's all about the effort you put into marketing and all about the manipulation you do with your keywords and your categories. And it really isn't. It is, I believe, tied to the thing it should be tied to, which is quality, merit, which is writing things that people really like. And that is what generates the most important aspect of all, which is word of mouth. And all authors who have been in this for a period of time know that's the most powerful form of marketing.
Exactly. No, that's brilliant. Thank you for mentioning my book.
Of course. Brilliant.
The publishing world is pretty complicated right now. And I'm someone who started in self-publishing and then kind of attracted an agent. And, you know, there's the potential for traditional. And from my perspective, I'm looking at it going, do I actually even want a book deal? Because now I'm so used to the control of things and, you know, the bookstores are going. And so everybody is confused. What do you see as, you know, the right way, or is there a right way, or where's this all going?
Huh. Wow, it's really interesting because the state of self-publishing is changing fast, whereas the state of traditional publishing is changing slow. And it probably because, well, it is because it's a large industry that's done things one way for 200 years, and it's very difficult for that huge monolith to make rapid changes. And that's what we're seeing happening. We're seeing, like, for instance, the big six publishers coming down and being big five, and I think it'll be big four at some point. And they're all trying to figure out how we reach the consumer in a way that will you know, bring value to the authors that we have. Now, for the self-publishers who, like you said, enjoy the control, they can produce more work faster. They can try things. You know, they can use short stories. They can use novellas. They can use novels to try things. I think there's just a great deal of experimentation that's possible. And so, you know, feel your way through. Go. I send people to your website all the time to just look at the articles and look at what's being discussed. Find a few of those industry, I mean, well, not into it, but self-publishing blogs where people are doing it well, and just begin a learning process there too. But over and above everything else, keep writing, keep learning and growing as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Do you see, because one of the more disturbing things perhaps is the big publishers getting into self-publishing, like, you know, the Penguin stuff with Author Solutions and agent-assisted publishing. And, you know, the whole area is sort of, there's grey lines everywhere. And especially people who have just got their rights back are kind of wondering, you know, as someone who is, you know, mature in the market, do you still think a hybrid approach is the best?
Well, it is a little murky out there, isn't it? I mean, it used to be very clean. We all knew what the relationships were. And there was one way to go. You know, you went from book to agent to publisher to bookstore and so on. And now, of course, that is all in flux. And yes, authors do need to be aware of, you know, the pitfalls and the possibilities. Now, I think one of the nice things is, as you mentioned, hybrid, is that it is possible. Now, a couple of years ago, I think publishers, traditional publishers, were very wary of people self-publishing, and there was still a stigma attached to that. That's all changed now with people like Hugh Howey and those great success stories. And publishers know that they can find people who are self-publishing, who are doing it well, as possible authors for them, because they still need authors. Mm. So I don't think that it has to be either or, and I don't think that we have to burn down buildings and have pitchforks outside the walls. We can all coexist and find ways to make things work. And for the writer, as long as they are producing good quality work, they're in a position then to, if, for example, if an agent is interested, they can sit down and talk about possibilities and go from there. And agents are overwhelmingly now becoming more engaged in what self-publishing can do how that relates to traditional publishing and so on.
Mm. Yeah, so I think the message there is pretty much try and learn as much as possible and go into any negotiation with your eyes open.
Yes, and you know there are the world of publishing contracts. I mean, that is another. Now I'm a lawyer, so I've read contracts and I've written contracts, and that's a whole skill set over there. But it's possible for a writer, and really necessary, to educate yourself on what publishing contracts were, are, and might develop into, and to make sure that you understand what you're getting into when you get into signing an actual contract. So there is a learning curve there, but it can be done.
Have you written a book on that?
I've not written a book on publishing contracts. There are some good books. Would I? You know, maybe I should. But there are some websites out there. If you just do a little Googling around on, you know, self-publishing and contracts and understanding contracts and contract terms, things like that, you will find places that will help to make that clearer to writers. But yeah, I mean, I've thought about maybe writing something about how to negotiate contracts and so forth. So maybe you stuck a little bug in my ear.
Yeah, well, just on translation at the moment, I'm doing a joint venture deal with a translator, and we're going to market in Germany together. And I've been approached by a German publisher, and I'm like, well, I could sell the print rights to you. And then I'm like, okay, I don't know anything about this. So I was thinking, right, next thing I'll have to do is find a lawyer and things. But now I think things are in such flux that authors are getting these opportunities themselves. And, you know, so I think there's going to be a much bigger market for understanding this type of thing and not just leaving it to the agent, basically. Or
right.
Doing it without an agent, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the great great things about the current climate is the possibilities. You know, there used to be only one real road for writers, and now that's expanded. And to me, it's a golden age to be a writer. I mean, to think that we have these possibilities now is so incredibly wonderful, because I have lots of writer friends over the years, and they've all writers have their ups and their downs. And, you know, some of them have gotten to places where they've been writing for many years, and then their publisher suddenly drops them, and it's very hard for them to find another place, and it's very discouraging and so on. And now we have a way to continue our writing, and that's fantastic, I think.
It is. It's brilliant. Now, I just want to end with one more question about your short self-help books. Now, I'm a massive self-help reader. I love self-help. So, I like it when, you know, thriller writers like yourself also have non-fiction, and you have craft, obviously. But and you have one about how to achieve your goals in your dreams. And I wanted to ask about self-discipline, because I think it is, if we got more self-discipline, we would be able to achieve those dreams. So any tips on self-discipline for writers?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I, you know, because I, started as a lawyer, and then I ran a small business. And so learning how to set goals and then also the discipline to follow through on them, you know, that's been a field of study for me. And I would say and writers, of course, are notoriously, let's just say they love to frolic in the field of their imagination and not think so much about discipline. What I would start with is to just get a blank calendar and look at your typical week. And in that calendar, just mark off mark it off the days or the hours within those days that you have some obligation. And then look at the blank spots. And those blank spots become the places where you can begin to say, this is when I will write, this, or this is when I will study, or this is when I will do some marketing. And then you begin to see that you can actually schedule those times. And then I think as a first step toward discipline is trying to prioritize your time so that you're doing the most important work first, which I would say is writing and then studying the craft and then finally thinking about marketing, because that's the natural continuum. So, you know, start by looking at your schedule and seeing what time you have available and then using that time wisely.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. So where can people find you and your books online?
Well, they're happy. I'm happy to have them come to my website, which is jamesscottbell.com. Everything's listed there. And, of course, any other place, an Amazon author page and so on. But that's where I'm available, and hope to see many of them there. Oh, let me also mention that every Sunday I do a column on a blog called The Kill Zone. Mm. So if you Google Kill Zone blog, you will find that as well. And we have a great set of blogsters there who write about the craft, and I contribute something every Sunday.
And I think I tweet it every week as well.
You're wonderful.
No, it's always brilliant. So thanks ever so much for your time, James.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.